I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Well, September has turned out to be dueling health insurance proposal month in the U.S. Senate. Senator Bernie Sanders unveiled a Medicare for All plan that he said would guarantee comprehensive health care to every person as a human right. He made the announcement flanked by 16 Senate Democrats. Senate Republicans are fast-tracking a vote on the Cassidy-Graham bill to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. They're up against some heavy hitters, including, of all people, Jimmy Kimmel, who blasted the bill on his late-night show this week. A few months ago, he had made an emotional announcement about his newborn son who needed surgery. Senator Cassidy had been on Kimmel's show to say that kids with pre-existing conditions would be protected, something he called the Jimmy Kimmel test. Well, here's what Kimmel said on Thursday night after being criticized for criticizing Senator Cassidy.
But I do want to say about Bill Cassidy, I do admire what he's done with most of his life. He's a doctor, a gastroenterologist. He founded a community clinic in Baton Rouge. He's done good things. I just want him to keep doing good things. This plan is not a good thing. His supporters say, well, you know, he's a doctor and you're not. What do you know? Well, to them, I say all of these very reputable organizations, American Diabetes Association, American Medical Association, American Cancer Society, American Heart Association, the list goes on and on. All of these groups populated by doctors say this health care bill is bad. They're against it. We haven't seen this many people come forward to speak out against the bill since Cosby, okay? So.
Ouch. We asked Jeff Stein to join us, Vox reporter who covers politics and policy. Jeff Stein, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. So is the fate of the Republican bill in Jimmy Kimmel's hands?
Well, his platform is really pretty incredible, and his digs aren't bad either.
It is interesting that here we are in September, obviously after the August recess, and you've got Bernie Sanders on one side, you've got the Republicans on another side. Are they in competition? Is this coincidence? How did this happen?
I think they're certainly in competition. Sanders sort of 200, I think, different rallies across the country to oppose the Republican attempts to repeal and replace Obamacare. There's going to be a debate on Monday night between Sanders, Amy Klobuchar, Senate Democrat in Michigan, and then Graham and Cassidy, the two Republican co-sponsors of the bill that they're now trying to pass before their September 30th deadline. But I think that's going to be maybe the climax of this whole thing, the point at which Senate Republicans decide that they do or don't want to go forward with a bill that, polling today suggests 24%, only 24% of Americans actually want passed, and closer to 60% say should not be passed.
And we should say, in a nutshell, the Republican plan would essentially block grant money to the states. Then the states would decide what programs, what policies they would put into place for the people living in these states. As you said,
it's not just that. It's important to note that while, you know, the bill does devolve some federal funding and power to the states, it also dramatically decreases the amount of funding each state has. I mean, it's one thing to suggest, and Republicans could have come up with a plan that would have simply said, we'll keep, you know, current federal spending and say the states can do with that existing spending as they'd like. But that is absolutely not what this does. This also cuts spending by, depending on which estimate you believe, up to 26%. So the states will have somewhat more flexibility, but that flexibility will come with much less money to deal with the problem. So the block granting thing is sort of the line that the Republicans have been using, and it's not untrue. They do in fact give money to the states to give, you know, to have more power and more flexibility. But it's also important to stress that added flexibility comes with much less money to spend.
Would you say the losers then are people currently getting their health care through Medicaid and also people who are depending on the subsidies from the Affordable Care Act?
I think those seem like the two big losers, in particular blue states and states that have done well under Obamacare stand to lose under the new funding formula that Graham and Cassidy have come up with. Basically says, you know, a lot of states didn't expand Medicaid under Obamacare, which was their choice. But the new bill says, you know, states that did expand under Obamacare and did so successfully should, in essence, be punished. And the money that they've used should be switched over and sent to the red states that have not expanded under Obamacare. So yes, like those are some of the losers. You're definitely right. And then some of the other losers are more specifically the blue states that did expand under the ACA.
I do want to talk about what Bernie Sanders is proposing, but Jeff, can we do a little dramatic reading between you and me? I'm going to play you. You interviewed 9 Republicans to find out if they knew what was in this Cassidy-Graham bill. We're going to do a little portion of you talking to Senator Pat Roberts, but Jeff, I'm going to be you. You're going to be Senator Roberts, okay?
I hope you do an impression of me well.
I'm going to try. This is you. Why does this bill make things better for Americans? How does it help?
Pardon me?
Why does this make things better? What is this doing?
Look, we're in the back seat of a convertible being driven by Thelma and Louise, and we're headed toward the canyon. That's a movie that you've probably never seen.
I do know Thelma and Louise, sir.
So we have to get out of the car, and you have to have a car to get into, and this is the only car there is.
This is you and Senator Pat Roberts.
Did that clear up the purpose of the health care?
Well, I was just going to say, can you interpret that for us in any way?
Well, so I think to be maybe more generous than critics of Senate Republicans would like me to be, there's a way in which both parties in Congress and really everyone on Capitol Hill is so obsessed with questions of process, so obsessed with questions of politics and timing and whip counts and votes that they are not used to talking fluently and frequently about policy, which is sort of like ostensibly what they're there for. And I've done interviews with Senate Democrats where it's like their minds are so structured to think in terms of politics and to justify things politically that when you ask them, you know, after this interview went up, a bunch of people, journalists, sort of readers were saying, wow, great job holding that senator accountable. And the tough gotcha adversarial question that I asked him was like, why are you voting for this bill? Like,
exactly.
Why is it good? Like, that is like the tough question. And so I think, you know, the answer he's giving here is 100% political. It's we have to worry about the midterms. I mean, to give him the most credit possible, he's saying that Obamacare is bad and essentially anything would be better. And this is the last remaining vehicle to get out of that broken system.
Well, let's talk about Bernie Sanders' bill. He's calling it Medicare for All. Every American resident would be enrolled in a Medicare system over the course of 4 years. How does he see this working?
Great question. So, you know, just to zoom out a little bit, and I'll try to do this quickly. Basically, we have a crazy hodgepodge healthcare system where 45% of people get their insurance from their employer, from their private sponsored insurance. Another 25% or so get their insurance through Medicare or Medicaid or through some other government benefit. And then the rest is sort of a mix. You have, you know, maybe 10% of the population getting it on the private exchanges outside of their employer through Obamacare, and another 10% or so who are uninsured. And that sort of system, because of the way it's financed, is extremely complicated. It allows people to deny coverage. People lose work, go out of work, and then they're suddenly out of coverage. People stay in jobs that they hate because they need to do so to remain insured if their partner or they have serious health conditions or are worried about getting serious conditions. So Sanders' bill says, not only are we going to insure everyone, we're going to insure everyone so they do not have to worry about paying to see the doctor. So he calls it Medicare for All, but it's really even more ambitious than that. Mm-hmm. Everyone over the course of 4 years, as you correctly pointed out, would get a Medicare for All card that would allow them to get virtually unlimited health care at no cost, with some minor cost sharing to incentivize generic drugs, the purchase of generic drugs, which are cheaper. And the way he would pay for this is a tax. He's released sort of a few different financing options, but the sum and substance of it is like a 5-6% payroll tax increase, a tax on Wall Street, maybe a wealth tax, but something that would hit upper income earners in exchange for giving everyone essentially free unlimited care.
Has he been able to figure out what this would cost, or is it just taking what our healthcare system costs today and just reformulating it?
That's a great question. I think, you know, during the campaign, a few people came out with estimates that were incredibly high that said, you know, that this would cost $30 trillion, which is sort of a massive explosion of the federal outlays and federal deficit. I think the important thing for readers, for listeners to understand is that while this bill and this proposal would substantially increase the government's role in healthcare spending, it would likely either reduce or keep level the amount that we as a country spend on health insurance. Currently, Americans spend a ton of money through premiums, through subsidies for private companies to give benefits to their employees. That America as a whole is already set to spend something like $49 trillion over the next 10 years on health insurance. And Sanders' plan is to radically simplify that, give everyone coverage, and sort of shift the current system onto the government load. And you critics object that may be less efficient. I'm skeptical of that argument, but it's certainly not true to say that this is merely a massive increase in healthcare spending. It is a massive shift in healthcare spending from what people pay when they go to the doctor to giving it to the government first. And that may be politically difficult to pull off,
sure.
But it is an attempt to both simplify our system, make sure everyone has insurance, and also, because the government would be the sole insurer, create bargaining power that would allow the price of prescription drugs to come down, that would allow provider rates where they're exorbitant to come down, where you currently have a system where hospitals are incentivized to bill for things that they don't need to do, because that's how they get money, and Sanders would give the government the power to clamp down on that.
And we're going to pick up on several things you said with our two guests who are waiting in the wings. This is a political question, Jeff. The Democrats are in the minority in Congress. Does this have a chance of moving forward?
I mean, obviously not right now. And even if Senate Democrats controlled Congress, I highly doubt that this would be their number one healthcare proposal. Chuck Schumer is the Senate minority leader. He is not a co-sponsor of the bill. That said, I mean, Democrats, I think, are ambitious and eager to do something on the healthcare system. They're eager to improve Obamacare and to show that they can truly cover everyone and reduce premiums. And Sanders' bill, while probably not the first thing Senate Democrats would implement, creates sort of a ideological pull where that is sort of now the position of a third of the caucus. So any proposal that Democrats want to pass is going to have to at least reckon with and surely incorporate elements of it.
And
so while this doesn't mean that it's going to get passed in the form that Sanders proposed it, it will certainly, and the mass support for it, the sort of unexpected support for it among Senate Democrats, suggests that the ideas in it will influence Democratic Party policy.
Well, Jeff, we have to end on that note. Jeff Stein, thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
Great being here. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Vox reporter who covers politics and policy, talking both about the Cassidy Graham bill and also about Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All plan. I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. A few years ago, Senator Bernie Sanders announced a plan for a single-payer health care system, and no one paid much attention. Earlier this month, he did the same and was flanked this time by 16 Senate Democrats, some of whom could have presidential aspirations.
Today, all of us stand before you and proudly proclaim our belief that health care in America must be a right, not a privilege. Today, we begin the long and difficult struggle to end the international disgrace of the United States, our great nation, being the only major country on earth not to guarantee health care to all of our people.
Well, today on Radio Times, we take a look at the pros and cons of Sanders' proposal, how that compares to other countries' systems, and what can be done to improve our complex and expensive and inefficient healthcare delivery system that costs more than $10,000 per person. Joining us here in our Philadelphia studio is Walter Sue. He's a physician, also an adjunct professor at the University of Pennsylvania Perelman School of Medicine, former president of the American Public Health Association, former health commissioner here in Philadelphia, and he's executive director of the Philadelphia branch of Physicians for Social Responsibility. Walter Sue, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Well, thank you, Marty.
You're very welcome. And joining us from San Francisco is Micah Weinberg. He's president of the economic think tank, the Bay Area Council Economic Institute, and he joins us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation, taking a look at single payer and specifically looking at Senator Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All system. Let me begin with you, Walter Sue, but then I want to turn to you, Micah Weinberg, and see if there's an agreement here. Is healthcare a right, or should healthcare be a right in this country? Walter?
Healthcare absolutely should be a human right. Not a privilege. And another way of phrasing it, perhaps, is should healthcare be a public good or a market commodity? Because that's part of the way in which we think about how we finance healthcare in this country. And it goes to the fundamental question about whether we should do the Cassidy-Graham bill or whether we should do Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill. And I believe that healthcare is a human right and it should be considered a public good.
What do you think, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree that access to basic health care is a human right. But it's also a more complicated conversation because obviously we make decisions about the type of health care that people have access to. And every country around the entire world makes decisions about trade-offs related to health care. And so, you know, when countries decide that a particular treatment is not worth the expense, they're saying that there are limitations to our ability to access health care. So although I agree that health care is a human right, I'm not sure that that is, gets us all the way to understanding what the health care policy in the country should be.
And can we agree, Micah Weinberg, and then to you, Walter Sue, that what we have now, as our first guest described, is a hodgepodge, but that it's also inefficient, it's expensive, and doesn't really give us the kind of health care results that we should expect from a system like this, Micah?
Yeah, absolutely. So the problem at a core level with the American healthcare system and the way at a core level in which the American healthcare system is different from every other system in the entire world is not that it involves private insurers. Every system, almost without exception in the entire world, involves private insurers. But every system throughout the entire world is also universal, and it is vastly simpler. So the problem with our system is that we have Medicare, Medicaid, the VA, employer-sponsored insurance, individual insurance, on and off exchange, and actually that's about half the list.
Right.
So we really need to simplify our system and make it more universal.
Let me go back to you, Walter. I knew you were a supporter of Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All proposal that he announced earlier this month. Why do you support that?
Well, I think, actually, Micah just gave the perfect example. We need to simplify the system. And the advantage of having a single-payer system is everyone knows where you send the bills to. Everyone knows who's going to pay the bills. Right now, we have all these multi-payer insurance systems and coordination of benefits, and people have to figure out who pays first and then second. Under a single payer, it's pretty easy to answer that question, and it would simplify most people's lives tremendously.
Going back to Bernie Sanders' plan, though, it is described as limitless coverage, basically that would be free, we wouldn't have deductibles, we wouldn't have co-pays largely. It would really be a free system. Is that what you're looking for?
Well, nothing is free in life, as we know.
That's kind of what I was getting
at. So we are.
But for the individual, if you go to the doctor.
Right.
You get the care that you think you need.
Right. And actually, one of the great things about such a system is that the first question they asked you was not show us your insurance card. It would be, well, how can we help you? What is it that we can do to help improve your health that you come here today? So I think actually that's a very important fundamental shift in how we approach health care. And I think it's one that most Americans actually would appreciate.
Michael Weinberg, a lot of people that get Medicare are very happy about it and feel as if it covers what it is that they need. There is supplemental, and I think a lot of people get that as well. But why not use that as a model?
Well, I mean, I think there are a couple of points. So quite a number of people are covered under Medicare and are happy with it. 155 Americans, million Americans in the United States are covered by employer-sponsored insurance. And generally speaking, they're happy with it as well. And actually, generally speaking, employer-sponsored insurance has a broader range of benefits than does Medicare. So when we're talking about, you know, different healthcare policies, we need to understand the extent to which they would be potentially radically disruptive of the care that folks are used to receiving and the benefits that they're used to having. For those 155 million Americans in employer-sponsored insurance, not every one of them is happy, but we are talking about trade-offs here. Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing we need to really, like, be clear. We're going to be really reducing the amount of benefits that tens of millions of Americans at the very least get, and maybe for a good reason, but we got to get that there's trade-offs.
But don't employers want to get out of providing insurance for their employees?
I don't know. They do and they don't. I mean, healthcare benefits are an important part of a compensation package for employers, and employers certainly care about the health of their employees. I mean, everybody would love, you know, imaginary free healthcare,
sure.
But you know, it's an important part of that relationship.
Imaginary free healthcare. Walter Hsu, you want to respond to that?
Well, actually, most employers do want to get out of this healthcare mess. I mean, maybe 10 years ago, people were happy with their healthcare and they didn't have to pay so much in copays and deductibles. But as we've moved toward what's considered consumer-directed healthcare, more skin-in-the-game ideas and more people trying to have to come up with $1,000, $3,000, $5,000 deductibles before insurance kicks in, people are really unable to come up with these types of cost-sharing demands. And these are the types of health plans that employers are offering. So employers don't like it. The employees don't like it. Employees are often stuck in what they call job lock because they have to get some type of health benefits from their employer. But if we had a single-payer health care plan, employees could go after anything they want in their occupations. They can be artists, musicians, and actually know that they could be covered.
In a single-payer system, as you see it, Walter Hsu, is there a place, a role for private insurance? Or are they completely locked out?
Those things that are not covered by the National Health Insurance Plan, and that's one of the things that is debated, can be covered by private insurance. In Canada, for example, they do have a robust private insurance system. It doesn't cover things that are the inpatient, outpatient services, but things like prescriptions, dental visits, ambulance services can be covered through that program. Now, Bernie's program that he's put together is a much more comprehensive than even the program that Canada has. And that will be one of the big debates that will happen if the legislation goes forward.
Michael Weinberg, is there a country you think that does this not just better than the United States, but could be a model that we could use for our own country?
Yeah, I think when I, you know, look around the world and think about both some of the systems that are achieving the best results and then some of the systems that, you know, realistically, there's more of a path for us to move to in the United States because, you know, 15 Democratic senators does not represent the opinion of the United States. I really look more to the Bismarck-style system. So this is the one in places like Germany, the Netherlands, and Switzerland, where there is a system of private insurers, but that are primarily, if not exclusively, nonprofit, very closely regulated by the government. And in my view, those systems, which are universal and adequately subsidized, are the best way to both achieve our goals of healthcare access for all and make sure that we're using market mechanisms. So one of the interesting and telling things about the Sanders proposal is that it keeps in cost sharing for brand name drugs versus generic drugs. And that is really an acknowledgement that a realistic healthcare system actually does have to wrestle with consumer incentives. So the Sanders plan has identified one of them, but consumer incentives in certain cases are an important part of a healthcare system, as Sanders recognizes. It just goes a lot further than Sanders is currently planning.
How about a country you look at, Walter Sue? Go ahead.
Well, let me answer that part.
Go ahead.
Which is that the cost-sharing aspect is meant to encourage generic use rather than trade or brand name use. But the advantage, actually, of generics is that generics are bioequivalent. That's why they're generics of the trade names. That is to say, there's a true choice here. You can choose the cheaper one or the more expensive one. And in that situation, they offer copays and deductibles that can happen. But for basic medical services, actually, there's no cost sharing here. And that's because there's no bioequivalent necessarily happening for the doctor that you really want to see, or the hospital that you want to attend.
But is there a country that you think has got it right and we should look at?
Well, I think Taiwan has a very good system. Back in 1995, they converted to a single-payer plan. And that was based on the recommendation of a Harvard economist named Bill Shao, who studied all the different health plans. He liked the Medicare program that we have in America, but he decided that actually if you offered Medicare for everybody in Taiwan, it would actually be a very good model. And so in Taiwan, everyone has a smart card that they use, their Medicare for all card, if you will, and they can actually use a card reader and a computer monitor, and they can actually see the medical histories for anybody at any hospital, and they can get their medical care that way. It works very well, and most people in Taiwan can see specialty services even within the first day or so if they really need it.
I wonder, I'll put this to you first, Michael Weinberg, whether a single payer saves money. We have a very expensive system. And does it have better outcomes?
Well, I mean, so much to say about this, right?
Sure.
So clearly there is a level of administrative savings associated with single payer. However, these get overblown a lot of times when people talk about these things. And people think that insurance profits are taking 30 or 40% of the healthcare dollar, when in fact, all administrative costs are under 10% of the healthcare dollar, and other countries have administrative costs. So we're talking about savings in the range of, 2 to 3%, and plenty of unbiased people have pointed this out. But it really depends what kind of a single-payer system that we have. And I appreciated the doctor mentioning that Bernie Sanders' plan is actually substantially more generous than the plan even in a place like Canada. Hmm. So that's, the concern for a lot of people is we're not being realistic about the set of trade-offs that we have to make if we're moving to a single-payer system. And when we look realistically at other countries like Canada, we notice that there's no national prescription drug benefit like there is in Medicare. There's very limited or no mental health coverage. There's no dental coverage. And although people are somewhat frustrated particularly small employer health insurance, most people, 100 million plus people with large employer health insurance, are used to having these benefits and are used to not having to pay more for them. So again, we need to understand that, we're going to have to keep the costs down in a single payer system as well as we have to do it in the private insurance system.
How do you see it, Walter Sue? And I want to make sure that we also just reference, do people get healthier because of a single payer system?
I think absolutely people get healthier. And part of it is because you can invest in prevention and public health much more under a single-payer system. Because under a single-payer, your incentive is actually to pay for the immunizations, the preventive screenings up front, because you're going to be paying for that down the line under the current system, on the single-payer. Under the current system, If you don't invest in these type of things, you could actually argue that, look, let the other insurer, let them switch to another insurer, and then I don't have to worry about the subsequent costs. Mm. So the point here is that there's a much better incentive to invest up front for prevention and public health under a single-payer system, and that actually helps reduce healthcare costs. Like our current system, the incentive is really to switch people to other insurance companies and let them worry about the problems.
But isn't it also true in this country, maybe true for other countries, is that it's a small percentage of people that use most of those healthcare dollars?
It is true, and it's estimated something like 20% of the American people use 80% of all healthcare dollars, right? So under a market-based system like we have now, your program is actually to avoid that 20% who's very expensive, the frequent flyers who show up at the hospital and so on. And you can do that by gaming the system and, you know, recruiting people who are basically young and healthy to get into your health system, a health insurance program. Under a single payer, there's no escaping about this. You actually have to cover everybody. And so your incentives are very different about investing in prevention and public health.
Mike, you want to add to that? We're almost up on a break, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that it's sort of frustrating because we're, you know, comparing the pre-ACA world to the, you know, single payer world. And unfortunately, that's exactly what Graham and Cassidy want to do. So it is no longer the case, it's just not understanding how the health insurance system works anymore, that health insurers have an incentive to get only, you know, young and healthy people. The way that we've changed to a risk adjustment system under the ACA, having very young, very healthy people exclusively means you pay a bunch of money to your competing insurers and it ends up being a bad financial situation for your insurance company.
That is Micah Weinberg, president of the economic think tank called the Bay Area Council Economic Institute, located obviously in San Francisco in the Bay Area. That's an employer-backed public advocacy group. He had an interesting piece in the New York Times earlier this week. Walter Sue with us here in our Philadelphia studios. He's a physician, also adjunct professor at the University of Pennsylvania Perelman School of Medicine, former public health commissioner here in Philadelphia, currently executive director of the Philadelphia branch of Physicians for Social Responsibility. We are debating and discussing single payer. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and stay with us. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are discussing the merits, the drawbacks, pros and cons of a single-payer system, and specifically the system that Senator Bernie Sanders announced earlier this month, something he's calling Medicare for All. And you can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read a couple of comments here. One from Lojo. Wouldn't at Medicare for All save on health care pension plan payouts and ease the medical portion of labor contract negotiations? Walter Sue, you mentioned earlier that some people are staying on a job they don't like because they're afraid of losing their health care.
Absolutely. But this question really goes to one of the big problems in America, retiree health benefits. Now, at one time, for example, General Motors had this enormous retiree health benefit obligation. In fact, it got to the point where they called themselves actually an HMO that happened to make cars. And the only way they could get out of it is to actually declare bankruptcy and trade the health benefits into something called a VEBA, which they gave to the unions to take care of for the retiree health benefits. Now, under a single-payer plan, actually, all future health care costs would be actually assumed by the National Health Insurance Program, and you could actually eliminate this as a major accounting error or accounting problem for this country. It would be worth billions and billions of dollars.
As you understand it, Walter Sue, does if someone wants to stay with what they have, whatever that is, let's say they're getting their insurance from their employer, and for whatever reason their employer will keep that insurance going, can they opt out of Bernie Sanders' plan?
Well, it's not clear to me on how they've written the plan whether they would allow you to opt out if you wanted to stay under your employer-based program. Technically speaking, under a single-payer plan, which is phased in under Bernie's proposal over 4 years, private insurance cannot duplicate what the Bernie's Sanders' Medicare for All plan would cover. Hmm. So presumably all private health insurance would actually be phased out at that point.
Michael Weinberg, you mentioned the Affordable Care Act. It's what we have now. Where do you stand on that? And looking going forward, are you saying what we really need to do is to make that work better?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think one of the things that's difficult here is, I'm very interested in this being a conversation rather than a debate. And all that I want folks to understand associated with single payer is that there are gigantic trade-offs that are associated with this. For example, everyone loses private insurance. Now, hopefully the public insurance is better. We can have conversations about that. But remember how much people lost their minds when we put the ACA in place, and that was an enormously conservative health reform. This is an enormous social disruption, maybe for the better, maybe for the worse, but we need to understand that, you know, it's going to have a massive impact here. I've been very involved in implementing the Affordable Care Act here in the state of California, where we've had a good deal of success for a number of reasons that we could go into. I really do think that we should build on our existing system to make it more affordable, more universal, and simpler, probably along the lines of the Bismarck model from Europe.
So borrowing from some of these other ideas and incorporating that into the Affordable Care Act. Let me get Robin from Pennsylvania to join us. And Robin, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes. Hi. I'm in healthcare. I'm a provider.
Yep.
And to some degree, I think the idea of single payer is helpful because the emphasis might be more on prevention and wellness. And if you take certain preventive services away, you really don't have healthcare. But our concern is that right now, a lot of the local hospitals are sucking up the private practices, and they're incentivized to do that. And I think we need to stop that. We are not encouraging fair trade. We are not encouraging choice for the patient. And there's too much that is not in favor of the recipient of the care.
Well, you know, Robin, that's a slightly different issue, but you raised the important role that providers play. And I wonder to you, Walter Sue, how under a single payer system, how would that change the job of a provider?
Well, I think that's a very important point. I should tell you that most doctors that I talk to are very, very unhappy with the current system right now.
The Affordable Care Act, you're
saying. Under the Affordable Care Act. And part of it is because they feel like they're just widgets in this giant market-based approach to healthcare. And the reason why people have to be bought out by hospitals is because of the owner's burden of the electronic medical records that people have to fill out, the collection of all this data that cannot be actually sustained by most solo practitioners. But under a single-payer plan, where you could probably just read a card and actually do the billing in under a minute, it would be actually very viable for most solo practitioners to survive. That's not viable under the current market-based approach to healthcare. So I think actually solo practitioners and physicians would find single payer much more attractive.
You want to weigh in on this, Micah?
Yeah, I mean, I think I appreciate the caller for bringing up the delivery of healthcare. You know, we argue a lot about sort of the financing of healthcare, but ultimately at the end of the day, you know, there are going to continue to be private providers. Those providers are going to continue to have market incentives. This whole distinction between a market system and a non-market system, and that moving to a single payer would get us away from a market system just is not really accurate to the extent that we still have private providers that still have private incentives. So there are plenty of providers who under Medicare are basically incentivized to do as much as they possibly can to the patients to run up the sort of volume and hence run up their reimbursement. But I think that when we think about, you know, the impact on providers, we probably should think more about this system being Medicaid for all rather than Medicare for all. Because ultimately, you know, there's only a set amount of money that we can spend on this. And a lot of the single payer advocates, of course, are saying this is going to be cheaper. Well, cheaper means less money for doctors, less money for nurses, less money for hospitals, right? Mm. That's where the money actually goes. And if you talk to providers about how excited they are about Medicaid, I don't know how it is over there in Pennsylvania, but here in California, Medicaid pays pennies on the dollars of providing medical costs. and really does lead to, you know, difficult decisions having to be made about, you know, access to patient care. So again, trade-offs.
And perhaps rationing. Walter Hsu, you want to respond to
that? Well, actually, the real trade-off is the amount of money that these health executives, the insurance, the pharmaceutical industry is making off the current system. The fact that we're requiring you by law to purchase private health insurance, that is an incredible boon to boon time for the insurance industry. That's where the money could actually be saved. I mean, at Penn, we have like 600, 700 people who just do medical billing all the time. Toronto General Hospital has maybe 8 people, 10 people. The amount of money that is spent in this administrative overhead has to be dramatically reduced. And still, and if you do that, actually, you can still pay the doctors a reasonable salary, the nurses and social workers, a reasonable amount of money, and take it out of the administrative waste that's in our current system.
I'm looking at something that Bernie Sanders had in the New York Times. I'll put this to you, Micah. He talks about the huge profits of the medical industrial complex. He talks about we remain the only major country on earth that allows chief executives and stockholders in the healthcare industry to get incredibly rich while tens of millions of people suffer because they can't get the healthcare they need. Do you quibble with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly true that there are, you know, corporate executives in every industry that make a lot of money. But I need to return to the earlier point, which is, in the aggregate, administrative costs within the healthcare system are under 10% of the healthcare dollar. And the, you know, savings that we would get are on the order of 2 to 3%, right? Dealing with all of the administrative costs in the healthcare system. And that's what all of the sort of neutral analysts have assumed is shown is going to be the case. So, you know, if you want to pay less for healthcare, you're talking about, I mean, the medical industrial complex also includes doctors, it includes nurses, it includes all the people who work within the healthcare system. If you look at a hospital, 60% of its costs are personnel costs. You know, these are unionized nurses and so on. We need to be honest about the fact that in single-payer countries, doctors make half what they make here. Nurses make half what they make here. So when we talk about, you know, a quote-unquote reasonable compensation, I think that's very altruistic and wonderful that there are doctors who are out there saying that I need to get a 50% pay cut. But let's be honest that that's what it actually is, and maybe that's appropriate, but let's have that actual conversation.
Let me add a tweet to that, a tweet from Carrie. How does, it just disappeared there. A tweet from Carrie. How does a doctor's need to repay large medical school debt play into the debate over single payer? Walter, you want to take that?
Well, actually, if we believe that healthcare is a public good and that physicians and nurses and social workers are part of that public good, we would subsidize their education. We would help try to make it so that they could actually afford to go through school and attract a diverse student body that is representative of the American people. And then, actually, in exchange for that, we tell them that you're part of a national health insurance program, and we'll give you a fair compensation for those services.
What's a fair? I mean, I realize what might be fair in San Francisco might not be fair in other parts of the country, or vice versa.
Well, let me
what
say
would be fair?
What's I mean, let's take Canada. Canadian primary care doctors are making equivalent to what American primary care doctors make, maybe even better. The specialists don't do as well as our specialists do, but you don't need, you know, making $1 million a year, frankly. You don't. How many yachts do you need, really?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. Let me get Matt from, looks like Long Branch, New Jersey, to join us. Hi, Matt. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
You know, I was just saying that the entire system of healthcare, having like all these different healthcares that certain people apply to one, other people can apply to another one, and having doctors and hospitals who accept a certain kind and don't accept other ones, it causes a level of a bias even towards the patients, you know, like you're treated, I guess, unfairly for the simple fact that maybe you have health care that's it's not regarded as high as another one, or
sure.
If you're a self-paying patient, you know?
Yeah, no, Matt, I know exactly what you mean. And I think what he's saying, and I'll put this to you, Micah Weinberg, which is with a single payer, everyone, there's a greater chance that everyone gets treated equally. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the key issue here is a single system. So I'm definitely a single payer advocate, I'm definitely a single system advocate, although I don't happen to prefer the particular way that that system is done in places like Canada. But the caller is absolutely correct that it is crazy. We don't have a market-based system. We have a mess, right? We have four single-payer systems in the United States, right? So this idea that we have a market-based system and everywhere else has, you know, a single-payer system just isn't true. Everywhere else has a simpler system than we do. And I think that we can, or at least should all agree, that we should move to a system where everyone is treated equally.
We talked in the beginning about how healthcare as a right, is it also a mandate? And this was one of the big debates with the Affordable Care Act, Walter Sue, about mandating, which was originally a Republican idea, I should add, that mandating people getting care was a way to make the system work better.
Well, mandate is only necessary if you actually have to purchase something like health insurance in order to get coverage. But if you actually have a system where you live in America and therefore you actually get health insurance because of the mere fact that you meet the residency requirements of this country, that's a very different way of thinking of eligibility. And that's actually what would happen under a single-payer plan. So I think actually it would be very easy. People say it would be very hard to enroll all these people. It would be very easy to enroll people under – you live in this country, you're mm-hmm. enrolled. You can fog a mirror. You can actually get into the health system.
A fog a mirror meaning that you're breathing.
You're breathing, right.
Michael Weinberg, we didn't spend any time talking about the Cassidy-Graham bill, but where do you stand on that? And this is the one that the Republicans are fast-tracking through the Senate this month.
Where do I stand? I'm distraught.
You're distraught.
I mean, it's just awful. I think people don't understand that, you know, I was very, very concerned about the Republican health bills earlier in the summer. This one is substantially worse than them. So we just concluded by all agreeing, me and the other guest and you and the caller, that the healthcare system is far too complicated. Among other things, the Graham-Cassidy bill would make what type of health care rights you have, dependent on what state you live in, create 50 different health care systems in the United States, which, among other things, happens to be a big problem for large employers you know, that operate in multiple states, but that's not the biggest problem. And my real concern about the single-payer, you know, push right now, or one of my big concerns, is it allows Graham and Cassidy, who are, by the way, going on CNN on Monday to debate Sanders, to set this up as a debate between a radical departure towards socialism, which a lot of people like, including your other guest, versus, you know, their federalist system. That's how they're framing it. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, should we preserve these rights and subsidies that people have currently, or should we do away with them? And I just really am concerned about the timing of the single-payer push and how it makes it, in my view, substantially more likely that Graham-Cassidy will be passed.
Wow. Well, we should say goodbye, although we could go on. My thanks to you, Michael Weinberg. Thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. President of the economic think tank, the Bay Area Council Economic Institute. Walter Sue, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. He's a physician here in the Philadelphia area, an adjunct professor at the University of Pennsylvania Perelman School of Medicine, and executive director of the Philadelphia branch of Physicians for Social Responsibility. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out much more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.